hello, and good day, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Magic, the First Pioneers. This is a podcast all about the Pioneer format, and we keep our listeners up to date with what is new, interesting, and powerful in the world of Pioneer.
And I am your co-host, Ryan Schwenk, the Japan hobbyist out of Tokyo, Japan, and you sound very excited today.
Yeah, I like to, you know, start things off with a boom here. And I am excited about today's episode. You know, this is one, we do this every once in a while, and it's been a little while since we've done it, so I'm real excited to talk about some budget decks. So, this is not usually much of a finance podcast, like that's not the main goal of it, but one thing that I always like to do is I do like, you know, deck building. I like to kind of get creative here. And we've done this a few times now where we kind of challenge ourselves to look at, like, hey, how do we get more people involved in the format? You know, mm-hmm. We just had some bans really shake things up. So maybe some people's one deck got taken away. You know, maybe people are interested in the format picking back up. They want to get into MTGO, start playing a little bit. And so what we do is we get together and we kind of assign each other. We're going to go through maybe some of the top, whatever decks, you know, like tier 1, tier 2 decks, and we're going to see if we can build some budget versions of them. So this isn't just being like, hey, we're going to build some bad decks, like we're going to build, you know, I'm trying to think of some, like, completely unicorns, or, you know, just some tribal deck that's jank. Total jank.
Yeah.
No, we're trying to look at what the best decks in the format are so that, A, this can be a nice way to, you know, try out those decks without fully investing in them, mm-hmm. and B, if you're like, hey, I really want to play this deck in the format, I won't spoil our deck choices yet, what you can do then is, you know, get this budget version. We're going to give you the most powerful version you can get at a cheap budget, and then, okay, here, I'm going to spend a little bit on this, I'm going to upgrade my mana base over time,
yeah,
just a little bit here and there, adding some dollars into it will get you to what a true tier one deck is right now.
Yeah,
and that's kind of the idea of the show. So each of us picked three decks which are showing up in the format, and we are going to go through them. And let me just call out, do we want to talk about the decks we talked about last time?
Yeah.
Because I think last time I did like mono red, mono black, and blue white control. You had done, do you remember?
I did Spirits, Sultai Delirium, and Heliod Devotion last time. And I think nice. You can still find these lists on our Discord channel if you want to take a look at them.
Yeah, they're still on our Discord, or we can probably link that episode that we talk about them afterwards, just as a way to kind of go in there and if you guys want to hear about those decks specifically. So, do we want to spoil the decks, or do we want to go one-on-one here?
Yeah, let's just start off with your first pick. What was your first pick?
Oh, see, I was going to make you, like, flip a coin for it or something. All right, I'm going to go with, I didn't think about, like, the most exciting way to talk about this. I'll go with what is currently the most popular deck in the format, at least from the most recent tournament results, which is Niv to Mizzet, Bring to Light.
That sounds so, you know, pricey.
Yes, you know, five-color deck, it runs a lot of expensive things. So I did post a non-budget version in our deck lists chat as well, if you don't mind checking that out first, just to kind of give you a an idea. You know, I think, yeah, $670, something like that. So, you know, Uro, huge price. The five color mana base, really expensive. It's an 80 card deck, and that adds more cards, is more price. You know, the mana base is the other big thing that costs there, and then just, you know, some random big cards to have a big effect, you know, even Oath of Nyssa. So a lot of expensive things here, and so the way that we did this is that we make a, what do you usually call them, like a starter deck or a
yeah, I guess, I mean, I call one budget, anything that's like $50 I call budget, and then I made like a $100 version as well, which I like to call Challenger, which is okay. Which is, I think, the name that's, you know, Wizards use when they make those starter decks that kind of have one or two of the staples in there, but the price point is still like around $30 or $40. But
yeah, I feel like the little bit of a difference there is that those challenger decks tend to have a slightly different deck building idea where they tend to go for a lot of, you know, one-ofs.
Yeah.
They'll be like, oh, here's the powerful cards, but as a one-of, and we're going to try a bunch of other one-ofs. Whereas, where possible, maybe we're using more budget cards, but we're trying to do four-ofs, you know, build it with competitive consistence in mind.
Yeah, so you still have the
win condition, getting to the price points there, what we're saying is we're going paper magic. I think we're using goldfish as our prices. Yeah, that's where we're both posting deck lists. So that's what we're using as our pricing. And we're saying cap of $100 for the challenger decks, you called them?
Yeah,
and for the even more budget version, we're going with $50. So $50 to build this Niv to Light deck. What are we doing? So we're cutting Uro, that's for sure, because he alone is pretty much that price point.
So you're starting with the super budget one.
Yeah, I'm going to start with my more budget one. Okay. So if you can take a look, if you're following along, take a look in our deck list. I've got it called Budget Niv-Mizzet. Super budget. Yeah, I called it budget and super budget. I get weird here. So what I looked at, the first thing I wanted to do is kind of want to take it down to a 60-card deck. So there's been a lot of back and forth. Like, I think we could actually, it's a good discussion. I'd love to have a pro on and discuss 60-card Niv-Mizzet versus 80-card, because I've been following a lot of the big deck builders, and I've seen it kind of go both ways. So what I went with here is I went with a way, the first thing I was in mind was, I was like, how do I make five colors work? So one of the things I thought about was there is Chromantic Lantern. I think that might have been a reasonable way to go, but instead I went with energy. So Attune with Aether finds a land of any color. You've got the Aether Hub, which is a four-color land that's really cheap. You know, they're like under 50 cents each.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just get to play some good cards up the curve. You know, Rogue Refiner is blue-green, which is good with Niv-Mizzet. You've got Whirler Virtuoso is blue-red, good with Niv-Mizzet. So a lot of ways that you can kind of do that, have some cheap removal, some cheap interaction. And then, you know, I do have Bring to Light. I do have Niv-Mizzet. Got both of them in here, and I'm kind of building around the idea of it's kind of, you know, just five-colored good stuff. You still get to play some of the good removal. You know, like Utter End is reasonably cheap. Solar Blaze is pretty cheap. I've got a Thought Erasure in here. Couldn't get Dreadbore, so I went with Ingress Rampage. That's not a huge step down. I've got a single Nahiri is pretty cheap. So, you know, I think this is a pretty reasonable mana base for being extremely cheap.
Yeah.
You know, even the Triomes are running up there, way up there in price. So
I like that you used the Biovac, the Frontier Biovac.
Frontier Bivouac, yep. You know, we kind of got the budget the Triomes stuff. are the ones that enter from cons. Yeah, they don't have the named lands, which didn't really matter here. And they don't have the cycling, but... the other thing that I did here, you know, I go to the Siege Rhino, we want to put some aggro on. The biggest thing I think this is missing is the Okos. Not the Okos, the Uros.
Mm-hmm.
Different blue-green overpowered card. So I did throw in here one Brokos. This is kind of a fun of, but just something else to give you a... I mean, A, it's a Bring to Light target, and then B, it's just something to give you Recursion from the graveyard, which you lose from not having the Uros in your deck.
Yeah, I like it. I think it's a... I wouldn't say it's a cute idea, it's a clever idea.
Yeah, and I think at this point, this version is pretty true to what the deck was going for. You know, I've got a couple of fun of's as good Bring to Light targets. So Confiscation Coop, this is something that was done in Standard with Bring to Light. That one's 5 mana, you choose an artifact or creature, pay 4 energy, and you know, you get 4 energy, and then you can pay any amount of energy and gain control of that permanent. So you can steal some really big or really nasty creatures with it quite easily. That Vivid Revival's also been fun, but that's probably pretty jank. Just a little bit something for additional... You know, that's my extra copy of Niv-Mizzet I couldn't play, is that Vivid Revival.
I like it. I mean, it feels like, how can I say, a limited deck almost.
Like I don't play a lot of five-color limited decks, but I get what you mean. Like, you're playing good stuff because it's in your colors, and you're playing removal because it's in your colors.
You're trying to make the splash work, and somehow... But it's like a very well-put-together limited deck. That's just from first glance, that's what it looks like.
All right, so any thoughts? Do you think this is a deck that you could, you know, $25 on MTGO? Is this something you'd bring online and try out for a league?
I wouldn't. To be honest,
you think it's pretty far down there?
I think it would have consistency issues, even though it does have like a lot of fixing and stuff like that. I think it would take a lot of practice to, how can I say, to get it to work the way you want it to work. I do like the card choices, though. And I think, you know, maybe starting with this base and then kind of as you work towards it, I think it'll get much, much better. So like,
yeah, I think that the upgrades are reasonably clear with this version. That it's very obvious, like, okay, here's how I'm upgrading my mana base. You know, I'm pulling out Evolving Wilds, putting in Fabled Passage. Taking out Frontier Bivouac and Opulent Palace and putting in, Zagoth Triome?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
What's the teamer one? Ketria, maybe?
I feel like I got both those right. so like at 50, I think it's just kind of like fun. It's jank. It's something you'd play at FNM with friends or something like that, but... Once you get up to like the $60 range or $75 range, then I think you start winning games.
But, yeah, that's reasonable.
But let's have you continue. Let's tell us how you upgraded this to the $100 version when you have double the budget. what can you do with this? I'm excited to see.
You know, it's tough because you can't add €1 in, or that's still gonna double your budget. Yeah. So you still have to make some interesting choices here. So what I looked at for this list, I might actually link it to you. I don't know if I'll put it in our Discord.
It is the budget and is it for 100.
Well, here I'm linking you another list that I was looking at. So a big MTGO grinder, Claudio. I think he's got the most trophies right now, pretty much always in Pioneer.
Mm-hmm.
He had run a 60 card version of Niv to Light that was trying to be a little bit more aggressive. So he was running Spell Quellers alongside Teferi. He was running some interesting things like Voice of Resurgent. And I just thought it was a kind of cool, more aggressive version of the deck.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to take a take on that. So A, you know, it's a 60 card version, a little less expensive. And B, he didn't run the Uros, you know, because he's going for more aggro rather than, you know, it's a little bit more tempo, not really aggro, but more, can do a little bit more tempo game. You don't need that big grindy aspect of Uro. So it's a little bit of a deck that, you know, I'm finding a way to get around using Uro, and that's letting me be a lot cheaper on the deck. I'm not being quite as heavy on the Planeswalkers. That lets me be a lot cheaper of a deck.
So this is what
I just linked you what I based it on, but my 100 version is kind of based on that. So, okay. You know, a little bit more of aggressive creatures in there. I've got, like, Voice of Resurgence, Faebro Elder, Radha. That's been seeing some play in Standard. You know, things like Reflector Mage, Hostage Taker, going up to Siege Rhino at the top end. Actually, this version isn't even running the Bring to Lights. It's kind of more on just an aggressive build.
So, you still hit Niv-Mizzet. You can still get really good card advantage.
Yeah, so you've got some tempo, you've got some aggro, and then Niv-Mizzet is a, you know, it's a 6-6 beater that also draws you a lot of cards. And then some nice things here are that you're good against the other Niv-Mizzet decks because you get underneath them. You've got things like Dromoka's Command to fight your Niv-Mizzet against theirs.
Mm-hmm.
That's always really cool. And then I think the biggest thing that he was really going for with this deck is Cut to Ribbons is a nice cheap removal spell that also is a win con for you.
There's some interesting choices here. Like I like the Faebro Elder, which is the 3-mana 0/0 that gets +1/+1 for each color of permanent.
So that gets up to being a 5/5 reasonably easily in this deck.
Yeah, and then it basically becomes a Sylvan Caryatid, basically. I mean, like it's or Paradise Druid, whatever. One of the cards that can make any color.
Well, so it's a lot better. It actually adds for each color. So if you've got a Niv-Mizzet in play, it taps for Wooburg.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you can tap it for 5 mana.
Mm-hmm. And it has vigilance, so you can attack for 5 and then throw out more stuff.
What? Yeah,
and then you can throw that all into a big Cut to Ribbons is kind of the big trick here.
Nice.
So this is a little bit different. It's not quite as close to the traditional Bring to Light Niv-Mizzet deck, but I thought that at $100 I had a little bit more to play with, you know, a little bit better mana base, some cool aggressive cards I couldn't have really done in the cheaper version.
I mean, I think, yeah, I like it. It. Like I said, it's really clever. I think it gives you a lot of cards that you could use in other decks. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, like the, how can I say, what else do they have in here? I can't think, like, Voice of Resurgence.
Voice is seeing play, yeah. I've got a single Deathrite Shaman that's certainly seeing play. The Nivs and
Dromoka's Command, obviously. Maybe. The Nahiri's in here. I can't believe Nahiri's only $1.50. That's insane.
Yeah, she's gotten weirdly cheap. You know, I think everyone bought her when they needed her for Modern, and then that deck disappeared completely. So people, you know, it's not that people lose their mythics, but, like, you know, it was really something that people knew, and they made sure to seek it out and had it in their folders. And then when nobody's playing it, you know, it's in every MTGO deck, so pretty cheap there and in paper.
Another interesting card choice I like in this deck is the Rien. Angel of Rebirth.
Yeah, that's kind of a fun of, which maybe I shouldn't be running with no Bring to Light, but had to try it out, and it's cheap for a mythic.
But you get to basically reanimate your multicolored cards. It says whenever another multicolored creature you control dies, return it to its owner hand at the beginning of the next end step. So even if, like, you lost like 3 or 4 creatures, they'd all come back, right?
Yeah, all of them.
That's insane. I like that, though. I think this one is a lot more competitive. I think you could actually win some games, catch a lot of people off guard with this build.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's just a few fun things. You know, like Rada's another good monosync for the Fae Burrow Elders. Some cool stuff here. So, yeah, I was a big fan, had some fun brewing around with this. You know, with a deck like Niv-Mizzet, it's cool to, you know, look for fun of, look for, you know, those weird little cards that don't see enough play. Mm-hmm. I actually really like Hostage Taker, even in, you know, 60-80 card versions of Niv-Mizzet, mm-hmm. like non-budget versions. I think that one should see more play.
Yeah, I'm always disappointed that I don't see more of Hostage Taker, so glad you added it into the list.
Mm-hmm. All right, so why don't we pass it back over to you? So Niv-Mizzet, one of the top decks in the format. What did you go with?
So, I've been playing a lot of Burn on Historic recently, and I kind of wanted to find a way that I could talk about it in today's show. So I went to the Lurrus Burn as one of my first choices, the Boros Burn decks. And if anybody doesn't know, Boros Burn basically is an aggro deck, I think. You know, it has a lot of one drops, a lot of two drops, Eidolon of the Great Revel, which is very pricey. And then it's got, I want to say, like, I don't know, 18 burn spells. And then it has Lurrus in the sideboard, so you can get Recursion. Not everybody's playing Lurrus in the sideboard anymore, or sorry, as a companion anymore, but there's still versions of that out there. And it usually runs around $200, I think, a little bit over $200.
Okay, so not the most expensive deck.
Yeah, so it's already kind of budget. But when I was building my list, basically I decided just to cut white altogether, because when you lose your Sacred Foundries and your Inspiring Vantages, you save a lot of money.
Yeah, definitely.
So if you want to take a look at my budget burn deck, I believe it's the first one I posted in the decklist channel.
Yep, under $50 here.
Yeah, $48.24 it says. Basically, we still have the aggro build. We have Gito Lavamancer. We have Monastery Swift Spear. We have Runaway Steamkin and Viashino Pyromancer. So very lean, low to the ground. It dropped the Eidolon of the Great Revel, and it also dropped the Soulscar Mage, because those were kind of pricey. And for the spells, we have Shock, Lightning Strike, Light Up the Stage, Skewer the Critics, Slaying Fire, and Wizard's Lightning. So we have a lot of wizards that can deal a lot of damage. Swift Spear does like a great... I guess it is the original prowess one mana creature.
Yeah.
But you lose that Soul Scar ability, which is kind of unfortunate, but still, a lot of ways to pump it up. Shock instead of Wild Slash, just to save you money there.
That's no loss.
Yeah, and I don't think, and everything, there's nothing else that's really different. I mean, you can still play Astella in the sideboard if you play against Lotus Breach decks, because that's super budget already. Skullcrack is probably much cheaper to play than Rampaging Ferocidons, but if you're playing a burn deck, you should probably be playing Skullcrack anyways to stop life gain. And what else do I have in here? And then...
So I see Chandra's Incinerator in the sideboard. Were you thinking about putting that in the main deck? Is that something you're big on with all these burn spells?
Yeah, I mean, I had that. I like it against aggro decks. I mean, if you're just burning people out, you can really easily get this out on turn three. Hmm. You know, just like shock them, and then skewer the critics, and then you have one extra mana floating, and you have a 6/6 that you can just keep burning to the face for the rest of the game, and it clears out their board. But instead, I have Bedlam Reveler in the main board, because with all these burn spells that you're playing, it's going to be super easy to play it for 2 mana and then refill your hand. So on top of Light Up the Stage, I wanted a way where I can just have something like that Experimental Frenzy effect, but not have to worry about, getting... What's the word I'm looking for? You know, like having that land on top and not being able to do anything that turn, wasting a turn. So,
okay, interesting. I'm really glad you're playing Slaying Fire. That's one that I feel like should have found a way into a deck and just hadn't.
I have 4 mana. I mean, 3 mana for 4 damage is not bad. I don't think there's anything. I mean, the other possible choice that they have, which is in the sideboard, is Exquisite Firecraft, which I have against like Control and stuff like that. So that is 4 mana, and if you have Spell Mastery, it's uncounterable.
Yeah, I'm surprised that's gone down in price, because that was seeing Legacy play for a little while. And now what I like about Slaying Fire is that it is an instant. That's what really makes a difference there.
And of course, another, I mean, if you haven't played Burn at all recently, Runaway Steamkin's actually really good. If you have a lot of one and two drops, it's very easy to just keep on putting counters on him, and then like you light up the stage, and then you put more counters on him, and then remove him, and then you're just like kind of comboing out with the burn spells and adding to that prowess. So,
and the question there for me is whether or not, you know, they've got Fatal Push, and that's gonna be the big problem with him. But yeah, seems reasonable. I don't know. Do you have a good plan against Uro? Because I think that's always a big problem for these red aggro decks. Or are we just gonna
Skullcrack to that? I would do Skullcrack and I think Skullcrack and Grafdigger's Cage are the two cards that I have for like graveyard strategies. Or I mean, for life gain in graveyard.
Okay, so Payday, you drop another $50 on top of this deck. What does that get you? Are you gonna add the Lurrus in that we were missing?
Yeah. So. Let's see, where did I put that? I put that here somewhere, I think.
Looks like it's the fourth one down.
Yeah, there we go. So, the Challenger deck, the aka $100 deck, we can finally play Soulscar Mage.
Okay.
That fits in there. You can actually play Eidolon of the Great Revel. So this is a lot closer to the Lurrus Burn build that people see. It's still dropping the white mana to save money. So everything else, all the creatures are still in there, except that, like I said, Eidolon and Soulscar are now added. And if Wild Slash, we can play. Again, it's not really that different from playing Shock, except that sometimes the last one is kind of relevant, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have hated if you still went with Shock here. I don't think that, you know, if you're new into Pioneer, you're trying for a budget deck, I think Shock over Wild Slash is, you know, the biggest price change you can get without any cost.
Yeah. And then other than that, I think, you know, I still have Bedlam Reveler in here, still got Swift Spear. This is just more of a creature based aggro prowess deck.
So it looks like a lot of the money upgrade you spent it on Soulscar Mage, you spent it on the Great Revel.
Yeah.
You know, a little bit here and there with Wild Slash with a Hazoret in the sideboard. Okay.
Yeah, so not that different from the other version.
Did you look at Torbrand? I don't know what he runs right now.
He's on like $2. I could do that. I wasn't sure if I could cast him consistently with only 20 mana. So, I mean, that's also another possible choice. Maybe something you would want to play in the main board, right?
So you're trying to stay real low to the ground, more, you know, a little bit more one drops, which is nice if you're running, you know, a lot more mountains than a red white deck is.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not running your Mutavaults, then running 15, pretty much 20 mountains is pretty solid. Okay, yeah. I like that.
And not running the Mutavaults saves you a lot of cash as well.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think this would be somewhat viable. It'll be pretty good against the slower decks. The Fatal Push decks, maybe it might struggle, but I think against slower control decks and slower mid-range decks, I think it'd be all right. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's reasonable. I think that, you know, there's not a lot here that I'd be like, oh, why is that person playing blank? It must be a budget choice. Like, I can't see any of these cards and say, like, oh, that must be a budget choice. No, these seem like it's a reasonable build. It might not be the exact build I'd go for, but I think that, you know, this looks like a solid deck. This looks like a perfectly competitive deck that you could take into a real game.
And this is actually really close.
The non-COVID Friday Night Magic.
Yeah, this is actually really close to what I'm playing in my casual Pioneer League at the moment, so.
Okay.
All right, so your turn. Back to you. Let's hear your next
deck. All right, I went with the most popular deck, so I've got to go with the second most popular deck for my next choice here, especially another one we haven't covered. And, despite being cheaper, this one was almost harder for me to build budget versions of. So I'm talking about Mono Green Planeswalkers. So, big idea of this deck is, you know, you're ramping out some big Planeswalkers that are getting you value every turn. You've got some huge mana. And all those things are kind of difficult without much of a budget. So when I'm looking at, I did link a non-budget version of who I'm running about $350. So a lot of the big mana, it's coming from Nykthos, and it's coming from Oath of Nyssa. You know, Nykthos are like $25 each, Oath of Nyssa's like $5. That's difficult. And then the Planeswalkers that are giving you value, you know, Karn is like $6 or $7, Vivian's like $7. So I felt like, okay, I kind of have to step back from those. Those don't quite work. I can't be running all of those in the stack. And that makes it really difficult because I don't think that there's a lot of variation in what the 60 card of this list looks like. You know, most of the 60 card lists that you'll find online are all very similar. So finding variation and keeping that power level was rather difficult. So if you take a look at what I did do, I'm going to look at the real cheap $50 version first. I do have a few Planeswalkers. I went with some cheaper choices. You know, I've got two of the 5-mana Nissa. I thought she's just that important for creating mana. And I went with two of Ugin the Ineffable. Mm-hmm. You know, he does still create value every turn. A little bit pricier, or a little bit, you know, 6 mana instead of 4 or 5, and not quite the impact. But, you know, he's some removal, and he's pretty powerful. I thought that was a decent choice. And then just, I go with a little bit more aggression, I think, to make up for the lack of some of the long game. So things like, you know, they usually run Jade Light Ranger, but I added in Garruk's Harbinger as well. I've got some Pelucranos World Eater because we needed a way to have removal. Couldn't run the what is the Hydra that fights things?
The
Voracious Hydra is also $4 or $5, so couldn't fit that into a $50 deck. So this came out at $49.94, and then I get a little bit fun. You know, I wanted another card as a top end to create value each turn. Went with Whisperwood Elemental. You know, it's not a Planeswalker, but it makes a 2/2 every turn, and it provides some protection against sweepers, which Planeswalkers usually do. Thought that was a decent choice for the deck, and they're pretty cheap at, you know, a little over a dollar.
Yeah, I like this. I like those card choices a lot, actually. This reminds me of, like, the first deck I built when I only had, I bought, like, 10 packs of cards, you know, and, like, I only got, like, a couple of cards, you know, that I could actually play with. I didn't have the full play set, but it was still, like, an okay deck.
Yeah.
So, like, the Polychronos, two of those, I like that. And then the Nissas, those are good cards. Those could win the game by themselves, to be honest.
Yeah, they can. You know, if you can still have a turn where you go, you know, turn one Elvish Mystic, turn two another ramp spell, and then turn three Nissa, those are still often game-winning games.
Yeah, and I like Ugin. Ugin has, he's good removal, but also, like you said, the card advantage, I thought that was a good choice. I even like the Kogla, the Titan Ape. I like that idea.
Yeah, I got a few fun ofs I was going to bring up at the end. You know, Kogla, that's seen some play in sideboards, I think, as a wish target, but, you know, it's a 7/6 for 6 mana that fights something. That's perfectly reasonable. You don't have, I think you've got Burning Tree Emissary is the only human that you could theoretically bounce. I've also got, you know, I've got a one of Kyretra's Acrolyte. I tried that out. That's basically the...
It's like Nykthos.
On a body, yeah.
Yeah.
I've also got a couple of Renata, the Called to the Hunt. So this is the green demigod, you know, just as some way to actually give you a devotion payoff, because otherwise there's no real point in it.
It's kind of like a Nambo with... I don't know, is it a Nambo with Polychronos? I don't know. If it comes in with a counter on it, can you not use Monstrous?
No, so Monstrous does specify that it, you know, it becomes Monstrous. Okay. It's not any +1/+1 counters.
Okay, so it's not like the other ones. One thing that I think you might want to try out, the Nylea, the original Theros Nylea of the Hunts. So I believe she gives Trample.
That's true. Creatures? I used to like that one a lot.
I don't know how much that's going for, but when you're playing cards like the 7/6 Ape and Polychronos and a lot of these other big creatures, I would think that you'd want to have a way to kind of push through damage. I'm pretty sure it's still kind of a budget card. So,
even Garruk's Harbinger. Yeah, that makes sense. I like that.
Yeah, so that would be the one thing that I would add, just like as a one-off. You know.
All right, so yeah, don't have a wish board, so I've got an actual traditional sideboard. Get to play some, you know, some fun things like Skylasher, like Blossoming Defense, just to shore up some of our bad matchups. You know, basically 5 copies of Nylea Disciple against Burn, one being Acetescent Petitioner.
Is there another card that's cheaper than that? Was there another one that was printed in Theros Beyond Death that was like 3 mana?
There's the 3 mana and the 4 mana. Yeah, I've got the Acetescent Petitioner as a one of.
Okay, where is that? Is that main board?
Sideboard, I'm talking about.
Okay, yeah, I see that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why did you...
All right, so...
I was going to say, why did you decide to go with Nylea's Disciple as a 4 of instead of the Petitioner?
I think a 4-mana 3/3 is just better enough than a 3-mana 2/2.
Okay.
It's enough better.
Okay.
Is the right way to say that. All right, so again, with the... You know, double my budget, I've got $100 for a green-black ramp deck. Sorry, I ruined the surprise there. I've got $100 for a mono-green ramp deck, and I'm trying to figure out what to do here. And what I ended up doing is I was thinking, like, okay, with a little bit more money, I can afford maybe one of the wish boards. So I end up getting Karn, the Great Creator, leaving out the Vivian. So I lost the Vivian. I don't have the Voracious Hydras. I was looking for, how do I still remove creatures? That's kind of a problem.
Mm-hmm.
I end up thinking, okay, why don't we look at Splashing Black? You know, that gives me some more options. It gives me some removal. And the other reason is that I'm like, well, I'm not playing Nykthos. It's weird to just play, you know, 21 forests in a non-budget deck or like a, you know, mildly budget deck.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that I'm able to, you know, splashing a second color makes up for the fact that I'm not running the Nykthos, which are so powerful in the monocolored version. So losing some of that, but I'm taking what I've lost and trying to work it into some additional power. So some of the cool black cards I get to add, you know, some Vraska Golgari Queen is a nice removal spell for a lot of planeswalkers, a lot of powerful cards. I've got one of these 6-mana Garuk in here. That thing can really end games. You know, and then I really get Fatal Push. I can throw some Casualty of War in, as well as some additional cards to look up with Karn the Great Creator in my sideboard.
Yeah, tell me about your wish board. Like...
yeah, so, you know, because I'm just going with an artifact wish board, I think I've got 12 cards here that are for it. You know, Darksteel Citadels, Traditional, Tormod's Crypt, Grafdigger's Cage, some Anti-Graveyard, Damping Sphere against Lotus, Heart of Kirin's just a great beater. Spyglass is kind of a catch-all. Boat, the Sky Sovereign flagship, just great card to blow things up and still cheap. Green Gear Hulk, and then a fun one here is I've got Black Gear Hulk as well.
Yeah.
So that's just a nice removal spell you can grab from the sideboard. Ended up grabbing that a lot when I was testing this. I've got a one of Bola Citadel on the sideboard, so that's a really nice card to grab in certain board states.
Mm-hmm.
Just get 3 or 4 extra cards off the top.
And then also the 10 damage. Godfrey
Statue, yeah. Meteor Golem. Yeah, so some more traditional ones, but some cool stuff there. You know, the main deck, I still needed a little bit more on the creature side, so I've got a couple of Scavenging Oozes in there. I've got a Pelucranos Unchained as a nice, you know, just something to do with all your mana late game.
Mm-hmm.
Here I'm going with more of the Nissas. I've even got one of the new Garuk, who's looked pretty good. Again, you were saying with a lot of things that need trample. So I'm trying out a few things here. Maybe I'm going a little bit weird with it, but I thought that this was a cool way to take the deck and something that makes sense with the limitations put on it.
Yeah, I like this. I think actually I would think that both versions would be competitive. Like I think you could be competitive with the mono blue, the mono green at $50, and you could be competitive with this black green ramp at around $100.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like.
Yeah, it was $100 when I built it. I see that it's crept up a little bit. I think the price of Karn may have gone up in the last day or two.
Yeah. I like the Noxious Gear Hulk. That's a really good choice from the sideboard. I think that's kind of clever. And I'm also glad that you're showing Vraska some love as well in the main board.
And you know what's cool? Yeah, I've got the Garuk's Harbinger. It can actually grab a Garuk Planeswalker. That occasionally comes up.
Yeah. All right, my turn for my second deck. Is that cool?
Yeah. Yeah, let me pass it right back to you.
So my second
deck. And I'm most excited about my third one. So
my second deck is Winota.
So, all right, this is going to be a tough one, so let me see how you did this.
So, I couldn't get down to $50. I tried. I remember us talking about this, a few months back, and you were like, you know, if you're trying to build a budget version, just go 2 colors. So I tried building a red-white version of Winota. And what I did is, again, like I said, I've been playing a lot of Historic. I tried to make this kind of like a hybrid Goblin human version, and this budget version uses Skirk Prospector and Goblin Instigator and Wily Goblin, and then also it has Legion War Boss, because you know that's like one of the big enablers that the original Winota deck needed to kind of be able to get all those creatures and get that critical mass. So we have a lot of ways to make mana early. So if we get like Skirk Prospector turn 1 and then Instigator turn 2, we can put down, for example, Legion War Boss on turn 2 after sacrificing that stuff and have that for the next turn. Or if we wanted to hold them around and then cast out a Winota the next turn, we could do that as well, like on turn 3. So we still get that ramp aspect. But you know, we also get more goblins, I guess. So
okay.
So that's how I started out building it. And as for targets, actually, because Goblin Rabble Master is a little pricey, I ended up dropping that altogether for Thopter Engineer, which is the 1/3, and it gives all of your artifact creatures haste. So it makes a 1/1 Thopter when it comes into play, and that can attack. So that kind of gives you that ability to kind of activate Winota just from playing it. And
it's also a human, so it's theoretically another hit, kind of like how we see Pia or Pia and Kirin Alar.
Yeah, so that's the other card I had in there, Pia and Kirin Alar. They give you two tokens, and if you have the Thopter Engineer in play, they get haste, so two more triggers for your Winota there. And then you still have your Angrass Marauders, of course, because that's super budget. And because, you know, this is a Winota deck, four of Winota I think would be fine. I don't think it's too... Yeah. Overly budget.
So that's probably where you blew your budget is those four Winotas. So it looks like you're at like $61, you know, a little bit over what we had budgeted for.
I could drop a Winota.
You could probably cut your Winotas in half and
you could
under 50,
three Winota and like a Legion War Boss maybe or something like that. And then maybe add in two PNLRs.
Okay.
Maybe. Yeah.
Seems doable.
And then
did you look at Resolute Blade Master, just thinking about, you know, when I saw early versions of Winota, I know that's something that they were going for.
Which one is that again?
So that one's the 5-mana something ally. It's a 3 red-white. It's a human, and when it enters or another ally enters, your creatures all get double strike. So it was another way to double damage and kind of double up on the idea of like, I'm just gonna get a huge Winota hit and win.
Okay, so instead of like Angrass Marauders.
Yeah, I mean, Angrass, you probably still want as a 4 of, but maybe you could throw this in as a 1 or 2 of. Because I know you can't afford something like a Kenrith probably on $50.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little pricey, like $5 or $6, I think. It just...
Yeah.
One of the cards I did add, I don't know if it's actually good, is Banalish Marshal. This is triple white. It's going to be kind of hard to play, probably, especially from your hand. But off a hit, it's not bad with all these tokens, I thought.
Okay. Yeah, you know, with all of the hits you already have, maybe I could see skipping it. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if I had seen something like... Is Selfless Spirit pretty pricey now? I don't know if that...
Yeah, Selfless Spirit's like $8 a piece, I think.
Oof. Oof. Yikes. Yeah, Spirits is popular everywhere.
Yeah, it's like $6 to $8. But land, I had to get kind of clever. I had to pretty much drop all of my dual lands.
Your duels.
So I have Battlefield Forge, and then I have Unclaimed Territory, just because I'm either playing goblins or humans.
Yeah, and you know, I actually don't hate that. I think that there's also a lot of warriors in some version of the deck, if you're looking at it that way. I guess not as much if you don't have Rabble Master, but that's doable. You know, you could have also probably thrown in some number of, you know, what's the red-white temple? Temple of...
Yeah, I wasn't sure if I wanted to be slow. I wanted to slow it down. You know, if I did drop the... You know, one of the Winotas and like maybe one of the war bosses or something. I could have saved some money there, and that would have made it more budget. The only other card that I think all versions share is the Tithe Taker, which is actually kind of a cool little weak Thalia, I guess you could say.
You know, it stops your opponent from interacting as much on your turn, and it also, you know, it leaves a body behind that can trigger Winota when it dies.
Yeah, yeah. So I like this. I mean, I think it's a decent build, but I'm not sure it would be competitive. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it'd be a little tough. I think that you're going to be pretty slow. You don't really have any interaction. Like I see you paid out about $3 for Bonecrusher Giants. I might have wanted to see those in the main deck, maybe over that Banalish Marshal. That just might be a little bit cleaner.
Yeah. So,
okay.
If I get more money, if I go up to $100, what can I make? So where did I put that?
I see you at like 115 here, so playing with it there too. But
yeah, again, this one actually tried to go up to 3 colors. I tried to do what the original version did and just kind of strip it down to the bare bones. So this Naya version... has Elvish Mystic and Llanowar Elves, so you can get those turn 2 3-mana creatures out very quickly. Tithe Taker's still in there. I played one of your favorite cards, the Garruk's Harbinger, as a way to kind of get card advantage. Legion War Boss is still in there. Pia Nalar, Thopter Engineer again, Pia and Kirin Nalar, so again, we still got all those, that Thopter strategy in the air. But with Pia, you can actually sacrifice them, which is nice, and get that extra damage in, or make your creatures unblockable?
You can sacrifice an artifact. It's like pay one, sacrifice an artifact to make it so a creature can't block this turn, I believe.
So like you
or
can
it's like
attack.
Red and one to give an artifact creature +1/+0.
So you can attack, but you can get that trigger on Winota, sacrifice it, and then make so their creature can't block, right?
Yeah, you can do it after attackers, after you've gotten the Winota trigger and it goes into play. It is nice.
So most of the money, I think, for this deck went into the lands.
And trying to improve mines a little bit. Okay.
It's still probably garbage, I think. You have to cut out rough. All the shocks. I mean, yeah.
The non-budget version has pretty garbage mana, so I've got to expect the budget versions, which aren't running 12 shock lands, are going to be a lot worse.
I mean, I wish we had more pain lands, to be honest. We only have Battlefield Forge in here. I have a Game Trail in here. I have like Rootbound Crag and Stumpetal Grove, and then I just have one Stomping Ground and one Temple Garden.
Yeah, I don't know if Game Trail is worth it when you've got, what, let's see, two Forests, two Mountains, one Stomping Ground, one Temple Garden. So you've got six ways to make probably an untap. Yeah, I'd probably just make that a Temple or a, something else.
But then that kind of like defeats the whole purpose of the deck, which is to get out of
being aggressive and turn getting two, out turn two, turn three,
But you could, I could add a little bit more in the sideboard. So I got Scavenging Ooze in the sideboard. I got Remorseful Cleric, which I like. It's kind of like an anti-graveyard card. Skylasher, fun card against blue decks. Knight of Autumn is another one that's still pretty cheap that I think is really good against your enchantment and artifact strategies. And then instead of the Chandra Torch of Defiance, which those decks, a lot of those decks are playing in the sideboard, I have the Chandra Fire Artisan.
All right. I like that. I like that there's some options with Chandra. You know, when we say Torch of Defiance is the best of them, and, you know, she hasn't been that popular lately, but, like, Fartisan as well as the M15 one are both, like, just a small step behind that.
I mean, the thing with the Torch of Defiance is that she can win the game by herself if you get her to ultimate, you know, the 5 damage, you know, to for any spell you cast, so...
Yeah, she's also better at 1-for-1-ing when she comes down.
So do you have any suggestions for this version? A little pricey.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. And I think this one, you know, this archetype is going to struggle without the best mana it can have. I'm sure it can still win some games. It's going to have some, you know, you'll get those occasional games where you can still win on turn three with this deck very easily. On the other hand, I don't think you'll get as many of them just because the mana's a little bit less consistent. So as long as this deck has a target on its back, mm-hmm. It seems tough to justify a budget version of it, because I don't feel like there's anything here that's an improvement over the non-budget version.
Yeah. Maybe the red-white would just be better as a $100 budget version
with more consistency. I like that both you and I think are kind of exploring when we've got that little bit higher budget to see what else can be done of a budget version.
And this is impossible.
It's not impossible, but I know how you feel.
All right.
Are you wanting to talk about my last one?
Yeah, what's
your
last one?
I'm real excited about this one. I think that both of these came out very strong in a slightly different way. I almost think this $50 super budget deck I'm about to talk about might be the best of any of the six I made at under $50. Popular deck that's been popping up lately is this Jund Aristocrats deck. Mm-hmm. So it plays Collected Company for a bunch of really strong aristocrat creatures, many of whom make mana, and then it goes up and plays Bull of Citadel as the top end and can just, you know, run through its deck, find a bunch of Zulaport Cutthroats, sacrifice their board, and kill the opponent. So that's a cool deck. Most of the cost of that deck comes from Collected Company, comes from the mana base, and comes from the sideboard Thought Seizes. So those are kind of the three places the deck's expensive. The actual creatures are really cheap. So I made two versions of an Aristocrats deck. At Super Budget, I made a just red-black version. At the slightly more expensive, I made a Jund version. So I'm going to talk about this red-black Aristocrats first. So the actual inspiration here, where I got a lot of the ideas, is... pretty much my creature base is almost directly ripped off of a historic deck I've seen.
Yeah.
So Cauldron Familiar, Serrated Scorpion, Priest of Forgotten Gods, Zulaport Cutthroat's not an historic. I'd seen some versions playing, I think it's like Bastion of Remembrance, which is a 3-drop that kind of does the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Mayhem Devil, Woe Strider. So, you know, all creatures, you know, pretty much all 4-ofs, all reasonably cheap and do a lot of things. And then, you know, get to play 4 Witch's Oven with the cat. You get to play 4 Village Rites. Such a powerful card. 4 Claim the Firstborn is an amazing removal spell when you've got like 8 ways to sacrifice creatures, and then Call the Death Dweller is just a great way to get them back or do things like give your Mayhem Devil Death Touch to turn into just a machine gun.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're a 2-color deck. We're really cheap. You know, I was even able to put some reasonable land base into a $50 deck here. I just think there's a ton of power in this little red black deck, and it's, you know, $20 on Magic Online if you want to try that.
That is pretty cheap.
So a little bit else, just looking over the deck list. You know, sideboard, I've got like some Fatal Pushes. I've got Agonizing Remorse over Thoughtseize there. Nothing too crazy. You know, even the actual non-budget versions, I think, have a pretty reasonable sideboard cost. But yeah, like all around, I don't feel like I lost out on power very much anywhere here. You know, if I could do a lot more budget just into this version, maybe I'd throw in some Kruxa just to give myself some longevity. But like, I just feel like there's a lot of power in this deck. It's a really cool list. Really happy with how this one turned out.
Can you explain the Gadrak, the Crown Scourge, in the sideboard?
Yeah, so it's an anti-aggro card. You know, we do have some artifacts, so it can reasonably attack, but it's a 5/4 blocker for 3 mana that's going to get maybe multiple treasure tokens every turn.
Mm-hmm. If you're making them sacrifice stuff. And
yeah, I mean, it's also your creatures, so if you activate a Priest of Forgotten Gods and that kills 3 creatures, then use the 2 mana to drop a Gadrak, get 3 mana right back. That's huge.
Or even with the Cauldron from Familiar.
Mm-hmm. And with Mayhem Devil, the treasure tokens are additional damage, so there's some synergies here.
So I'm trying to think. You could realistically attack with this on turn 4 because you play Oven, Cauldron Familiar on turn 2, and then Sacrifice, and then you get a token, right?
And sure, then, that's 2.
And then I guess you'd have to play another card. Yeah, maybe not. That's 2, and then you could maybe have 3 possible. I guess if you had another... Nah, never mind.
There's probably a way you can do it on turn 3, but we won't get that complicated.
Yeah.
It's a sideboard card. We don't have to go that deep on it. But yeah, well, I mean, what do you think of this list? Do you think something like this is playable? I know you're an Aristocrats fan.
I definitely, in Historic, something similar like this could do very well. Instead of using tier language, I like to use the MTG Arena language now. Is this a Mythic deck? Is this a Platinum deck? I think this is a strong Gold deck. I think this would probably be a lower tiered Platinum deck. I think you could definitely win some games with this one.
Okay. I think there's some cards here that can really run away with it.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like right now there's not a lot of life gain on some of the more grindy decks in the format. So when you're hitting them for, you know, like if you're sacking a Cauldron Familiar and getting 2 damage in there, you know, Priest is getting in damage there, Zulaport, it really adds up. And I found a lot of times, like, even if my opponent can outvalue me, they're just losing their life total and there's nothing they can do to slow that down.
Yeah, I like it. I think it could definitely win some games. So your less budget, your $100 deck.
All right, so my less budget version, I went with Jund. So I still couldn't afford the collected companies. So without those in the deck, I thought it was more reasonable to go back to Cat Oven, which the current versions do not have. The BRG version I listed, the one with the collected companies, runs about 350. This one is running under 100 here.
Mm-hmm.
Or right at 100, something like that. So still a lot of the same, you know, like Blister Pod, Gilded Goose, Priest of the Forgotten God, Zulaport Cutthroat, Catacomb Sifter, which is, if you guys haven't seen the deck, that's the 2/3 that makes an Eldrazi Scion that can be sacked for mana, and whenever a creature you control dies, it scries one. And then because I'm also, you know, again, not playing Collected Company, I get to play Korvold, which is just a kind of a big bomby card that I have a lot of ways to ramp out early.
I've always wanted to play with him.
Yeah.
So
he's a fun card.
I'm glad you put that in there.
But then we do have the Witch's Oven, we've got the Bolas Citadel, we've got some Claim the Firstborn still as a sweet removal spell, some Call of the Death Dweller, so a little bit of that same Aristocrat strategy, as well as the ability to just big mana out something like a Korvold or a Bolas Citadel.
I noticed that there's only 20 lands. Is that going to be enough?
Yeah, I think that's pretty reasonable. You know, it is a lot of cheap creatures. You know, Blister Pod, Gilded Goose, Priest of the Forgotten Gods all make mana. I don't think that's unreasonable at all. Oh, Catacomb Sifter as well.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that'd be the one thing that I would worry about. That's my one take from looking at this deck, is that I'd play 22 lands, especially if you're playing three Fabled Passage. So the Fabled Passage just seems like, you know, you're getting rid of all your lands, you're going to run into problems if they kill your Gilded Goose, etc., etc.
The tough part is you really don't want a lot of lands when you're Bolas Citadeling, because you'd only play one land a turn. Yeah. You'd much rather hit creature, 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 and then win the game.
True, true. Yeah, Grill Charm in the sideboard. Why are you playing that one again?
You know, that's what I've seen in a few of these kind of lists. It deals damage to flyers is the real reason you're playing it. And that third mode is 3 damage to each creature with flying. You need some way to be able to interact with the spirit stack, which you don't have otherwise.
Okay. Yeah, I like that. That's a good idea. Yeah. Let's see, I don't know if this would be more or less. I like the consistency of the red-black one.
I do too. You know, like I said, I feel like that red black one's one of the best decks I built this way. I'm probably gonna fire that up on MTGO. Yeah. Honestly,
like this has better cards, stronger cards, but I think that yeah, you'd probably lose out on the consistency issues. That's my take. I'd rather play the red black version and just upgrade it to like $100 than to try to build the Jund version on $100.
Yeah, I felt that way a few times. You know, I think with the Niv to Light, like the energy version felt way more consistent even than my my more aggro whatever version. So,
yeah.
You know, maybe that was a fail, but I wanted to try a couple different versions when I was doing this.
So you want to listen to my last deck?
Yeah, no, I'm excited about this one.
So I'm actually not a combo player, so I don't know why I chose this, but I made Lotus Field as my my last choice for today's budget podcast. And
do you have an updated version? Because I did look at your list and you were a little high on price. I'd give you a couple tips on it.
Yeah, and I mean, I didn't update it. I just figured I'd read over this and then okay, I'd have you just kind of talk about the what do you say, your suggestions on air. So
sure.
My super budget, actually, I got down to $67 and I couldn't think about what else I wanted to get rid of. So,
come on, it's a two-color deck, $50. Or I guess it's three-color now. So
yeah, so I kept it three colors. I could have probably reduced it to two colors and it would have been fine. So the new versions out there are already kind of budget themselves. I believe they're like $170 tops.
That's pretty good.
So, like, you know, it wasn't that hard. I just had to get rid of some of, you know, like the lands, basically, or, you know, maybe some of the really pricey sideboard cards that they have. A lot of these new Lotus Field decks are playing Fae of Wishes in the main board, and this allows them to kind of wish board anything they want. For example, their win conditions from the sideboard. That's actually a really cool idea, I thought. So you still need to have your four Lotus Field as, you know, in the deck. Maybe we could go down to three. I'm not totally sure.
Yeah, so it's like a, you know, $6 card. So if you're leaving $26 for the rest of your 71 cards, I can see how that's difficult. You know, hopefully if your guys are trying to build this deck, you know, just pay a little bit extra, get that fourth Lotus Field.
Yeah,
I think that's reasonable. Because I mean, that's for our Lotus Field.
That's the whole point of the deck. And like,
yeah,
you can cut out everything else, but having that just lets you build pretty much almost everything else.
Yeah, and real quick, since you didn't really go over it, is like you were talking about the new versions. If people haven't seen this deck, so it does go a little bit harder on making big mana. So it usually runs double cast, which is two mana to the next spell you cast this turn, double it. So, you know, you cast that and then a pour over pages, that gives you plus six mana. Same thing with Hidden Strings, gives you plus, like, 10 mana on its own there. You know, you get to play the Vizier of Tumbling Sands, so you make all this mana, and then usually what you'll do is you'll go, like, Fae of Wishes into Omniscience from the sideboard, and then you can, you know, cast any cards you have, you can grab a Omnipotence from the sideboard, and just win the game with a Jace on the spot.
Or Enter the Infinite, but we don't have that kind of money, so I cut all that stuff from the sideboard.
Yeah. So Enter the Infinite and Omni are both pretty expensive.
Yeah, so some other changes I made, I got rid of Dig Through Time and just added Treasure Cruise in there. Then we're going to be filling up the graveyard, and we're not going to be using them for, Underworld Breach anymore, so why not? You know what I mean?
Yeah, so that's a tough one just because, you know, I do like Treasure Cruise in some of these decks because, you know, it's half as much mana for twice as much card advantage. Like, people don't really think about that, but one mana versus two and three cards versus, you know, plus two cards instead of plus one. But I do think that Dig was a big boon for this deck because it found
your combo pieces
when you're going off. Yeah, if you draw lands with Treasure Cruise, they're not very useful.
True. The mana base hasn't changed too much. The big changes in this budget version were all from the sideboard.
Okay.
And if we're making big mana, like you said, we're going the big mana way, I thought I'd want to have some big mana cards to take advantage of it. So I added in, like, Banefire as a way to, like, burn the people out and they can't be countered. I have Expansion and Explosion, so think of this kind of like a Reclamation-type deck that's pretty cheap. What else did I have in there? You still have Jace, Wielder of Mysteries, so if you're going with the whole mill yourself out with Hidden Strings, and I mean, you probably could do the... What's that mill card? The Flooded? The Flooding? I don't think that's in here.
Flood of Tears?
Or, no, the 2 mana, it's from Ravnica Block, or Return to Ravnica Block.
Flood of Memories, maybe?
No, it's the one where it's like whenever you tap a permanence or something, you mill two.
Oh, right, yeah. You know, I'm surprised we haven't seen that. I think that was usually played with Lotus Breach, is the one where you tap, whenever you tap, you enchant a land, whenever the land taps, they mill three or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. So, I mean, you could possibly play that in here as well. Let's see, what else is kind of pricey from this deck? I mean, it's really cheap, to be honest. You know, we have Anger of the Gods in the sideboard, we have Jace, Wielder of Mysteries, like I said, is like your win condition if you mill out yourself. Shifting Ceratops against blue decks, those things are only like, what, 60 cents each, 70 cents each? It's really good. We got Storm's Wrath, Hour of Devastation, we have Niv-Mizzet Perun, so if you're drawing cards, you can kind of ping people to death.
And so just another win con, that's pretty easy. Well, you can't wish for those, though, so that's kind of awkward.
Yeah, because that's only instants or sorceries. That'd be more of a sideboard card, I guess.
Well, it's non-creature.
Or non-land. Another interesting one is Thought Distortion, which is the 6 mana kind of... Was it they discard their hand and it can't be countered?
Yeah, it can't be countered, and they exile all of their non-land cards from hand and graveyard.
Yeah. So that's interesting.
Yeah, so, you know, that's a card that I think sees play in some of these sideboards. That's totally reasonable. Yeah, you know, I think that this is probably, if I wanted to get into Lotus Breach for real cheap, pretty much how I'd do it. You know, I think not having Blast Zone might be one of the weird, like, small... biggest losses.
Yeah. I think you said I should drop the Niv-Mizzet maybe from the sideboard, and
yeah, probably drop them if it's $2.50.
And I think you said maybe get rid of Anger of the Gods and just put Sweltering Suns, maybe would make it a little bit cheaper. Yeah. And
tough, but yeah, I was just trying to get you down to the $50 mark. I think that might help with it.
Yeah, I mean, possibly just going, I don't know, blue. I guess we need green in here though, right? Could you do just green blue, you think?
It would be tough. You know, you'd lose the double cast. Your mana's not too bad because you're mostly making red with Lotus Field.
Yeah. So.
Okay.
Okay, so the last part's the Challenger version, the $100 version.
$100. Yep.
And I think this one actually I got really close to $100 on. With that extra cushion, I could add in a few better cards. So it still has, like, the Fae of Wishes and everything in the main board. I think I'm still playing Treasure Cruise, though. I mean, maybe I should just go for the Dig Through Times.
Yeah, what's the cost difference there?
I think Treasure Cruise for 4 is, like, $1.40, and I want to say it's, like, $2 or $3 a piece for the Dig Through Times. So they're, like, $12.
So maybe drop something like this Perilous Vault or the Finale in your sideboard.
Yeah. So basically the Perilous Vault I added in there was because... they had Ugin in there, but Ugin's like a $30 card or $40 card. And I still wanted to have that exile effect, you know, so I'm like, why not? You know, it's $4 or $5 instead of $30. Maybe I just don't need it at all. I don't. What do you think?
Yeah, you know what? It's not bad. I don't hate that idea.
Because you're not really playing a lot of permanents, and it's not that hard to cast if you're making all this big mana anyways. So, and it's something you can get with Fae of Wishes.
Yeah, so it's, what, 9 mana total rather than the 8 from Ugin?
Yeah.
But Ugin sticks around, which is always nice. Like, he's a win con. So that, I mean, yeah, obviously we're not going to put Ugin in a budget deck, but I think it's a reasonable way to go.
So this is more of the combo kill. Like you said, it has Omniscience in the sideboard. It has Enter the Infinite in the sideboard. So you draw your entire deck, and then...
And the one of Jace. So $25 sideboard win con, but I think it's reasonable. It's worth the money out there.
Yeah. So, I mean, the Omniscience is so pricey. That's the priciest thing in the sideboard, $16.
Yeah.
But I figured why not. Everything else is pretty much the same. And the Finale of Revelation was the other big one. And that,
yeah, which I don't love. You know, if that was just another expansion explosion, that might be cheaper.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. I do like you managed to get some blast zones in there, a couple more dual lands, which is a big upgrade.
Land gets a...
And then obviously as you're upgrading more, you would put in some, breeding pools and things.
Yeah, So which one do you like more? Do you think this one has more of a chance?
Yeah, I think this one actually does stand a chance. I would want to get those dig through times in there, and then I'd feel like the main deck is pretty much how I would think it would play. And you've got your win con from the sideboard anyways, so the sideboard doesn't matter much either. Like, yeah, I think this would be very close to what a correct version of the build is. You know, just a little bit on the mono base where you could spend more money, or an Ugin in the sideboard.
So would you drop, like, the Omniscience maybe for the four dig through times to be able to keep it on the budget?
No, I don't think I'd drop the Omniscience. I'd probably drop the Finale for an expansion explosion. Yeah, I bet you could find a little bit of wiggle room elsewhere.
Yeah, maybe get rid of the Niv-Mizzet and...
Yeah, definitely the Niv-Mizzet. Yeah, so that would be $10. That would give you your upgrade.
Yeah, okay. All right. So, favorite...
All right.
My favorite build, I think, today is probably going to be your $100 Niv-Mizzet aggro deck.
Yeah, had some fun with that one. Mine's definitely that that red-black Aristocrats. I didn't mind your $100 Lotus Breach at the end there. I thought that looked pretty reasonable.
So Pioneer is not... Basically, if you get anything from today's show, I just want you to try to play Pioneer and, you know, don't feel like it's too expensive. There are definitely options out there. And I don't know if Kevin said this already, but all of these deck lists are going to be in our deck list channel on our Discord channel for the first Pioneers, which we will have in a link on this... on our podcast channel. So, you know, feel free to check them out later.
Yeah. And, you know, I'd hoped to get a guest on this episode. I'd love to throw someone else into our craziness and give them this challenge. Cause like, I feel like I thrive doing these $50, $100. I don't know if you guys have any content creators out there, or if you're a content creator listening and you'd love to jump in for one of these budget episodes one time, we would love to have an extra set of eyes looking at these crazy ideas we're throwing out here. But yeah, I think it's a fun episode. I always have a lot of fun. And I didn't want to just build, like, you know, there's some cheap decks. Like, I think, like, the Ensoul deck, the Feather deck could be reasonably cheap as a full build. But I wanted to instead look at, like, these are the top decks right now. Can we build them on a budget? And I feel like we did a good job at that. So this was fun. If you guys want to reach out to me, tell me what you think. Or, like I said, if you've got any pros in mind to do this in the future, I am at MTG Pioneer on Twitter, the one and only.
And you guys can find me on Twitter at Yoshwenky, YOSCHWENKY.
And you can check out our notes to get the podcast, or the Discord link, which is where you will find the deck lists, as well as just another way to go ahead and talk to us and our other listeners. But that'll bring us to the end of our show. Anything last minute here, Ryan?
No, I'm good. We talked a little bit longer than I thought we were going to talk about it, but yeah. I'm fine with that. I think it was a good topic.
All right, so that's going to bring us to the end of our show. Thanks so much, guys. We are the First Pioneers, and we are your go-to source for Pioneer information online.